This Dharma Talk is brought to you by the Chicago Zen Meditation Community. Learn about us and our teacher, Miyoshi Thompson, at zenchicago.org.
Good evening. Tonight I want to talk about mind. And I want to talk about the mind that is in the room and on Zoom right now. It's so interesting because, you know, we arrive here separately, coming from our own involvements and our own affairs. But by this point, we've kind of harmonized. By now, our minds are really more alike than they are different. Our Zen ancestors had an imagery for it. They used the imagery, box and lid fit. It means so-called separate individuals realize their relatedness to each other. In the current mind that's here, our purposes are converging. And that convergence makes it possible to see that there is something transcendent about us, something about this practice. It's not just self-help. There is a harmony in this practice that expresses wholeness, maybe even universal wholeness. We don't always notice it, but it's true. Sometimes, maybe for really brief periods, we feel that we're really in sync with the world. More than a decade ago, it was in March. And I was at Ramundri, the monastery, and I was carrying my suitcase to the car. I was about to go home. And as I did this, I heard the trill of a red-winged blackbird someplace behind me. It sounded so close. And I automatically turned in the direction of the sound, and I saw it right there on a March bare branch. And the red patches on its shoulders were so vivid. And its call was announcing, "Here I am." And when I looked at it, the words that came to my mind were, "Oh, there I am." It was so engaging. In moments like that, where we really feel engaged with the world, we feel like we've come home. It's the kind of moment where at some level, we actually stop. We're not trying to go anywhere else. We're not trying to get anywhere else. Here is what there is. And at least momentarily, we're attuned to this. But then, there's always something. Eventually, someone doesn't do what you want them to do. And there's frustration. The box and lid then feel pretty much ajar. And we see how easily our selfiness asserts itself. And we realize the dualistic world is still with us. And we know it's making its appearance because, you know, the universe does not get frustrated by some other. There is no other. And there is no frustration from that viewpoint. What would it be to be in complete harmony with everything? Another way to ask the question is, what is right here? And yet another way to ask the same question is, how can I help all beings? There's many forms of this question, but they're all asked by the same mind. In Pali, the language of the ancient texts, and in Sanskrit, that mind was called bodhicitta. Bodhi means awake or awakening. And citta means mind heart, heart mind. For those of you who are familiar with the Japanese, the word shin in Japanese also means kind of heart mind, not just, you know, mental stuff, but heart mind. Do we have a word for that kind of mind in English? I was thinking, could we say deep mind? Could we say intuitive mind? Neither of those get quite there. This is the mind that sees relatedness rather than separate things. This is the mind that reaches out automatically to help. Sometimes the Sanskrit word bodhicitta is translated as way-seeking mind. And I think it's very poetic, but I'm not really comfortable with it because it sounds like way-seeking mind is pointed somewhere else, like to the other shore, you know, the way is over there someplace. We should understand that seeking the way means finding the way right here. It may seem to us that seeking the way is like aspiration and practice, and finding the way is like realization or nirvana. But really, they cannot be divided. Dogen, our great teacher from ancient Japan, said very practically, if you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. Our practice is not the practice of waiting till we get there, but of practicing right here. So maybe instead of saying way-seeking mind, bodhicitta is just the mind of the way. In Japanese, we would say doshi. And the early Buddhists used this word for that mind. The word is citta, this heart mind that I'm talking about. There's other words that they had for mind that they didn't use. There was one word, mano, which means kind of rational thought, left brain, definitely left brain activity. And another word for mind that they didn't use was vijnana, which is discriminating, discerning mind. We're all familiar with vijnana, even if we don't call it that. Vijnana is a consciousness that's colored by our personal intentions, our strivings, our habits, our patterns. The early Buddhists call these factors sankhara, which means mental formations, means that which shapes our consciousness, which forms our consciousness. And vijnana is the mind that typically steers us. It's the consciousness that's been formed by our conditioning. All of our encounters, our traumas, our prejudices. And vijnana is very stubborn. It's straight ahead mind. It calculates personal gain and loss, and it takes us that way. It always comes up with the same solution. Buddha thought that this mind was kind of dangerous. He said, what one intends and what one plans and whatever one has a tendency towards, this becomes the basis for the maintenance of consciousness. When consciousness is established and has come to growth, there is the production of future renewed existence. What he was saying was that this mind, vijnana, our the mind of our involvements, the mind of our habits, the mind of our traumas, vijnana is how we carry ourselves forward from moment to moment. It's how we fool ourselves into thinking that there's a self, because we're constantly renewing the same limitations on our consciousness that we've had since beginning this time. Our consciousness gets shaped, it gets encrusted with our personal strivings and with our avoidances. And eventually, that's all we can see, and we can't imagine anything else. So Buddha thought that this was dangerous. He said, when there is the production of future renewed existence, future birth, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair come to be. This is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. Buddha said, if you want to keep on suffering, just let this mind that is narrowed by all of our conditioning, give this mind full rein, and you'll find out. Birth and death, aging, sorrow, lamentation. He really posed the question to us, do we really want to be on this wheel for the rest of our lives? Even more, the rest of our lives, life after life. So what encourages us to make the move from acting on kind of my self-interest to acting on our interest? The Theravada answer, the answer to that the early Buddhists gave, was that we should look around and we should see that everything is impermanent, that there's no self that endures, and that everything is involved with creating suffering. We take a bit of a different view. It's not that we don't see the suffering of the world, but instead of being motivated to avoid it for ourselves, we find ourselves moved to help those who are suffering, including ourselves. Bodhicitta, this mind of awakening, emerges from compassion. We know that this practice that we do enriches our lives, and we want to help others discover the jewel that's already concealed in the hem of their clothing. Bodhicitta is actually the aspiration towards loving exactly what is. It's very closely related to dana, which is the practice of giving or generosity. It's very closely related to metta, the practice of kindness and friendliness. Bodhicitta is our mind. It's present in each of us right now. We all decided to come and sit on our cushions and to receive instruction. And probably, I think, in everyone here, there is some openness, some sense that there might be more to life than we typically think. This is the mind that we equally share right now. This is the mind of the way, bodhicitta. It's the view that in any moment we can encounter the Dharma, that we might encounter something in the very next moment that will help us to open up. It might be a red-winged blackbird. It's our willingness to let this zazen act on us, to let this memorial service affect us, to let this Dharma talk mean something to us, to let this fellowship move us. This is bodhicitta. Now, being quite candid and objective about it, our bodhicitta is kind of flickering. It's like a light bulb that is not completely in contact with its socket. We have some light bulbs that like that at home. You know, they flicker for no reason. But if you turn on the microwave, then they really flicker. You know, it's kind of a fragile contact sometimes. Sometimes we talk about deepening our practice. And what that actually refers to is how consistently our bodhicitta, our mind of the way, is engaged. How steadfastly the mind is engaged by the way. We really see this in sesshin. Sesshin is our, you know, longer periods of meditation, a weekend of meditation. In sesshin, we pretty consistently lean toward the mind of the way. It's hard not to. We have zazen, then we have ginhin, and then we have more zazen, then we have liturgy, and then we have a very beautiful ritual that we do with our meals, and then we have more zazen and more dharma talk. The next thing is, every time, the next thing is the dharma. We can't help but lean towards the dharma. We can't help but generate the mind of the way. We have meals, we have communal work that's geared towards benefiting the Sangha. And we have zazen after zazen after zazen. And so the mind is turned again and again to the practice of being present right here. And pretty soon, the light bulb is on consistently. Our sesshin days are not completely silent. There's a few breaks after meals and after the work period, and usually some people will talk, often quietly, in the community room, sometimes raucously. But we end up enjoying each other. Sometimes, you know, people are gathered in the community room and I'm in the Duksan room and I'm working on my Dharma talk or something like that. But I hear the tone that's coming from the community room. It's always kind of relaxed, always sounds kind. This last sesshin, I thought to myself, maybe that's really bodhicitta. That's the mind of the way, the mind that offers friendliness to each other. 10 years ago, almost to this day, we started to sit on Sunday nights at the Cenacle Retreat Center, Catholic Retreat Center in Lincoln Park. Ordinary people couldn't help wondering, would this house perish or not? And for some of us, today is maybe the 500th time we've sat together on a Sunday or a Monday night. For Nick, Mary, I knew you were there at the beginning or very close to it.
Just after,
for me. We really learned from each other, gathering week after week, what bodhicitta is. Bodhicitta is the desire to offer the Dharma in whatever form we can. Right now I'm offering it by teaching, but please don't get caught up in the dichotomy of giving and receiving. Recognize, either now and the next time you come here, that you are coming to offer the Dharma yourself, whether you're giving the talk or sitting zazen or on Zoom or in person. You're coming to offer the Dharma to your friends. We offer our zazen. We offer our openness. And we offer our own wisdom. In this orientation, not just towards practice, but to offering our practice to others, to any beings, all beings. This is what bodhicitta means. It's the intention of offering our practice.